Blog Talk Radio.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Mr. Speaker, here's the latest reality game. Let's play Wall Street bailout. Rule one, rush the decision. Time the game to fall in the week before Congress is set to adjourn and just 6 weeks before an historic election so your opponents will be preoccupied, pressured, distracted, and in a hurry. Rule two, disarm the public through fear. Warn that the entire global financial system will collapse and the world will fall into another Great Depression. Control the media enough to ensure that the public will not notice that this bailout will indebt them for generations, taking them from trillions of dollars, taking from them trillions of dollars they earned and deserve to keep. Rule three, control the playing field and set the rules. Hide from the public and most of the Congress just who is arranging this deal. Communicate with the public through leaks to media insiders. Limit any open congressional hearings. Communicate with Congress via private teleconferencing calls. Heighten political anxiety by contacting each political party separately. Treat members of Congress condescendingly, telling them that the matter is so complex that they must rely on those few insiders who really do know what's going on. Rule four, divert attention and keep people confused. Manage the news cycle so Congress and the public have no time to examine who destroyed the prudent banking system that served America so well for 60 years after the financial meltdown of the 1920s. Rule 5. Always keep in mind the goal is to privatize gains to a few and socialize losses to the many. For 30 years, in one financial scandal after another, Wall Street game masters have kept billions of dollars of their gains and shifted their losses to American taxpayers. Once this bailout is in place, the greed game will begin again. But I have a counter game. It's called Wall Street Reckoning. Congress shouldn't go home to campaign. It should put America's accounts in order. To Wall Street insiders, it says no on behalf of the American people. You have perpetrated the greatest financial crimes ever on this American republic. You think you can get by with it because you are extraordinarily wealthy and the largest contributors to both presidential and congressional campaigns in both major parties. But you are about to be brought under firm control. First, America doesn't need to bail you out. It needs to secure the real assets and property, not your paper. That means the homes and properties of hardworking Americans who are about to lose their homes because of your mortgage greed. There should be a new job for regional Federal Reserve banks. We want no home foreclosed if a serious workout agreement can be put into place. And if you don't do it, we want a notarized statement by a Federal Reserve official that they tried and failed. Second, taxpayers should directly gain any equity benefits that may flow from this historic bailout. We want the American people to get first priority in taking ownership of the institutions that want to pass their toxic paper on to the taxpayers. Third, before any bailouts for Wall Street, America needs major job creation to rebuild our national infrastructure. America needs assets, not paper. We need working assets. Fourth, the time for real financial regulatory change is now, not next year. A modernized Glass-Steagall Act must be put in place. We need to reestablish locally owned community savings banks across this country and create within the Justice Department a fully funded unit to prosecute every single high-flying thief whose fraud and criminal acts created this debacle and then forced their disgorgement of assets going back 15 years. Fifth, any refinancing must return a major share of profits to a new Social Security and Medicare lockbox where the monies can go to pay for a dignified and assured retirement for every American. This member isn't voting for a penny of it. Those who created and profited from this game of games must be brought to justice. The assets they stole must be returned to the American taxpayers right down to the tires on their Mercedes. Mr. Speaker, I ask my colleagues to join me in co-sponsoring my bill to create an independent commission to investigate these well-heeled wrongdoers. Real reform now or nothing.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Things have got to change.
How many stations does this go out?
You've got to get mad. You've got to say,
I know it was to Louisville and Atlanta.
We're not going to take this anymore. Then we'll figure out what to do about the depression and the inflation and the oil crisis. But first, get up out of your chair, open the window, stick your head out and yell, and say, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Louis residents, don't be alarmed if you see Army vehicles rolling through your neighborhood this week.
Yeah, News 11's Dan Gray is live with reaction from residents. Dan?
Yeah, Tom, we are at the U.S. Army Reserve Center near Goodfellow and Natural Bridge in North St. Louis. Just up the street here on Goodfellow, there are dozens of Army vehicles, Humvees, trucks, tanks, parked in a parking lot. They're there every day. But now what the St. Louis Police Department is saying, that some Army vehicles may be rolling through neighborhoods in the police department's 6th District, which is far north St. Louis. And don't be alarmed if you see those over the next 7 days rolling through your neighborhood. It is part of an Army training exercise. Now, that's according to St. Louis Police. We have called Army offices in St. Louis, and we've called Army offices in Washington, D.C., trying to get information about why this training is going on here and what it's all about. Well, we haven't heard back from anybody at the Army just yet, but people who live and work in this neighborhood say they think the training here is a good idea.
I think it's the same way when you go out to other countries, when you go out of town, they don't have police officers, they have troops. And I think it kind of scares a lot of people.
Like cut down on crime?
Crime, yeah, cut down on a whole lot of crime because they don't know if they're military or they're police.
I think it's fantastic because this might slow down some of the crime rate. You know, the crime rate might go down. You know, that's what I think of.
So mostly what they do is hold summits.
I think that right now the question is, do we all work for central bankers? That's what I want to address to our guest tonight. Is this global governance at last? Is it one world, the central bankers in charge? Jim Urio, you say we've got some downside here, a correction in the markets. Fine. But aren't we all just living and dying for what the central banks do? Aren't we all just counting on the fact that there's a Bernanke put and that we won't go any lower than, say, 5% down from here?
Of course we are, because if we look at the economic data, there's nothing to get excited about in that. So we, you know, yesterday we saw some reluctance for the Bernanke Fed to expand their balance sheets and pump more money in. But the stock market knows that reluctance is totally different than not willing to do it at all. And that's why we saw oil implode and gold trade off heavily, because they're not a protected class. If the stock market starts trading off in the 10 to 15 to 20% area, the chairman's going to come in and throw some stimulus at it. So to answer your question, we are absolutely slaves to central banks. We'd love to be slaves of the economy, but the economic numbers continue to do nothing but trend lower.
Mr. LeCamp, do we work for the central banker? Mr. LeCamp,
We do. Look, markets are driven by policy now. They're not driven by market forces. They're driven by fiscal cliffs. They're driven by central bank proclamations. They're driven by false rumors coming out of the ECB.
Fiat currency
really
that's continually watered down. They continue to water our currency
Absolutely.
Down so the markets go
but
up and we feel good about it.
Yeah, and listen to what the Fed did this weekend. I think they really screwed up here. They said that we're going to do this Operation Twist through the end of the year. In other words, they're going to create uncertainty about what happens after Operation Twist, right at the same time that the fiscal cliff kicks in. Do we really want all that uncertainty?
Jim, but we have to give the Fed a break here, because the Fed realizes that what they're doing is probably going to have very little economic effect. The only real thing that can help is fiscal and policy changes. So the Fed, all they have is rocks and stones left. They're just going to throw them. They know that they're probably not going to do any good as well.
Gentlemen, Jim and Jim.
Isn't that why we know that there's going to be QE3? Isn't that why we know there ultimately will be QE3?
That's what I'm banking on.
I love what you said there, Jim LeCamp, about the idea that
ultimately there will be.
Jim LeCamp, I'm not sure which one said this, but that we're basically beholden to what the central bankers and policymakers do rather than
absolutely.
To the fundamentals in the economy, because we have not been able to generate real growth without doing one of two things. That is debasing the currency or borrowing our way to a false prosperity. Jimmy Orio, how do you invest under those circumstances?
What's the question there, Ty?
How do you invest under those circumstances?
Oh, we invest because remember that every central bank in the world, not just us, ultimately have to devalue their currency. So you can't keep, you got to put your money in stuff. Big cap U.S. with good balance sheets, to me, is the world's tallest
digit. Mr. LeCamp, every major country holds gold. That tells me that it's attractive. Is it attractive to you with a watered down currency?
I think it's very attractive, both as a currency and a store of value. I agree with Jim. Ultimately, you're going to want resources, but volatility is going to stay with us. So I think investors need to get used to trimming what they don't like and having their portfolio on rallies and nibbling at what they do like on sell-offs, because these aren't going away. Mm-hmm. The only good news here is that free markets will fight back. When we see bond riots in Spain and bond riots in Italy, those are free market forces fighting back, and ultimately they'll win because investors ultimately will walk away.
I think I heard him say he likes gold.
He did say that.
I do. Jim, the two Jims, thank you very much. And John, interesting, I was at a conference this week, and one of the most persuasive investors I talked to there said that he felt that what you have to do right now is buy things that are scarce. He said gold was scarce. Aggregates are scarce.
All right, everybody. It's Monday night, and it's time for the Constitution Hour. And I see we've got a lot of good chat going on in the chat room already, and that is awesome. Always makes for a good show when we have a lot of interaction. You know, I started out with that Get Mad and the young Democrat lady from Ohio complaining about the bailout. And I agree with her on a good number of the things that she spoke of. I disagree with her on the banking system serving us well after the Depression. The Depression was largely created by the banking system that they believe served us so well. And in that last clip, we heard the gentleman on CNBC or MSNBC's CNBC's, you know, money investment show, talking about, aren't we just really debt slaves to the central banks? Not just our own central bank, but the central banks of the world. And they all agreed, very much so. And then the gentleman quipped, we like it that way. It seems that we do. And of course, in between, I played the clip of the local Fox News in St. Louis, of course, glossing over the military armored vehicles and Abrams tanks rolling through your neighborhood. And of course, they found a couple of local residents who thought it was a good idea. The one gentleman said, well, you know, it's kind of like when you go to other countries, you don't see police, you see troops. Yeah, you know, that's really a good idea. I think that's probably the next step that we should take here in the United States of America. We don't have enough police on the streets as it is. Crime is rampant, and we all know how well the federal government enforces the laws. So by all means, let's discard the Posse Comitatus Act, and let's institute military troops on our streets, rolling around with armor. I think this is a great idea. You know, if someone's caught shoplifting, they should just be trotted out in the middle of the Walmart parking lot and run them over with one of the tanks. You know, we could do like a Tiananmen Square type thing. I mean, this is really the way to take care of these despots, don't you think? We'll send in the Marines, or the Army, the Special Forces. Maybe we could send in SEAL Team 6 to the local Walmart to get rid of all the shoplifters. My God, we could end crime in this country if we would just become a totalitarian government where the military is the police power. Have the people in this country completely lost whatever semblance of common sense and intelligence they may have possessed? Meanwhile, we have this Supreme Court decision upholding Arizona's immigration check. If you get stopped by the police and you look like you're not legal, they have the right to ask you. Of course they have the right. They've always had the right to ask. And guess what? Most of those people that get asked, they get asked because they don't have a driver's license, right? However, what they're not able to do is enforce the law, right? Because the court said, well, there's no way for Arizona to really enforce the law. So they can ask, they can actually verify that you're an illegal, but they can't do a damn thing about it other than say, shame on you. Maybe they can write them a ticket and fine them, right? Get real. And they have the audacity to talk about Arizona moving to protect its sovereignty. I've got a little something I want to read to you, because there's this thing that once upon a time there was this country that was founded. And it wasn't really a country. It was a collection of free and independent nations. They called them states back then. And they decided to get together and form a union. They figured that collectively their strength was much stronger if they bonded together in a union to actually recognize each other and each other's citizens as being sovereign individuals. And so they got together this union and they put together this thing called the Constitution of the United States. And what it did was it actually created a new government, and that government was charged with certain responsibilities for the union of states, the free and independent states. And you know, one of the things they said in there, and it was kind of interesting, in Article 1, Section 9, they talked about, because we had the issue of slavery at that time, the migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808, but a duty or tax may be imposed on such importation, not exceeding $10 for each person. So, I suppose now, if Arizona wanted to turn the tables, they could start importing illegals into their state, offering a reward. Of course, that would be funny. If Arizona set up an immigration station welcoming all the illegals in and giving them provisions and a ride to the border so that they could traverse their way into California. I wonder what California would think of that. But they went on to state in this wonderful document, the Constitution, and it's really great. You should read the history of this document. You know, once upon a time, it was the cornerstone of a great idea. But they wrote in Article 4, Section 4, that the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. Wow, invasion. Really? I wonder what an invasion would consist of. Perhaps people coming into your state without permission, people who weren't citizens of one of the other states, people that did not have the natural right under the law to enter into your state. Now, that's not to say that we're so obtuse that we would want to keep these people from passing through on vacation or visiting, looking at the sites. But when they want to set up shop, when they want to rent an apartment and get a job and collect government benefits from a government that they have not paid their fair share to coin a phrase of some of our friends on the other side, well, you know, that is an affront to everyone that does pay their fair share, don't we think? I certainly think so. What say you? Any of my audience have anything to say about that? Feel free to call in. Our call-in number is 646-378-0321. Again, that's 646-378-0321. And then, I think this is quite literally the icing on the cake. You know, we were talking earlier in the chat room about Abraham Lincoln. Kyra had brought up Lincoln, or I had, and Linda as well. And, you know, Lincoln did something to initiate the Civil War. The Civil War was not a war that was done under a declaration by Congress. Abraham Lincoln took it upon himself, and the excuse that Lincoln used was that he was charged with carrying out the execution of the laws of the United States. And in so doing, he marshaled federal troops to put down an insurrection. That was his reasoning. Now, our current president, Barack Obama, has stated that, you know, Lincoln is one of his idols. And with good reason, I do believe. Perhaps President Obama could take a lesson from Mr. Lincoln about faithfully executing the laws of the United States. But in true fashion, Obama announced today the following, and I'm going to read you just a brief article. The Obama administration said Monday it is suspending existing agreements with Arizona police over enforcement of federal immigration laws, and said it has issued a directive telling federal authorities to decline many of the calls reporting illegal immigrants that the Homeland Security Department may get from Arizona police. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a directive from the president to an agency, an executive agency, to disregard the law. There is a word for that. It is called treason. It is a betrayal of the public trust. What in the hell is wrong with people? You know, I've said it before. I don't have any issue with the people that want to come to this country. I don't care if they're brown, yellow. I don't care who their ancestors were. That doesn't bother me in the least bit. There is, however, a proper legal method to do so. And that should be followed. If you cannot respect our laws, just a simple law regarding your immigration into this country, then I have to have suspicion that you may be inclined not to obey other laws that we have in our country, like stealing or rape or murder or any other local laws and ordinances. I understand, and my heart goes out to those people that are oppressed in Mexico and Guatemala. But you know, the problem is that we have this open door policy that encourages these people to come here and sign up for free benefits. Now, it sounds all good. It sounds very benevolent. But then we hear these horrible stories about all these people who have come here and they're trapped. They're trapped in the United States and they get caught. And then they're deported. And oh my God, how heartless we are as Americans to be deporting this poor 8-year-old little girl who never did anything wrong. And it wasn't her fault that her family came here illegally. They're correct. It wasn't that little girl's fault. It was her family's fault. And it was our government's fault for not enforcing the law and allowing this kind of thing to happen. If we enforced our immigration laws properly, and if people would take the trouble to go through the proper channels, and if government would streamline the process so that these people could apply and get some kind of answer within a reasonable amount of time, we could alleviate a lot of this. But if we'd also get rid of all the entitlement programs that encourage these people to come, we would see self-deportation. And that's been evidenced in many states. Well, we've got several callers on the line. I see we've got Mr. Robert, and I see we've got Miss Linda from California, and I've got another caller here in the 812 area code. Who do we have?
You got me, Ron Bill.
Oh, hey, Bill. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. You know, I addressed the same issue quite a few times now, and what I always tell these people who are fleeing their country because their country is corrupt and whatever is, do you not see what we're doing here? We're fighting the corruption here. If you want your country to be a better country, then you have to stay and fight. You can't just walk away and leave everybody else, your fellow countrymen, in that bind and think that somehow you're going to get them to hear and we're all going to be able to provide for you, because we're not. You're sinking the country that you're fleeing to, whether you realize it. And I know they ain't doing it on purpose. And you're exactly right. It is the parents. The parent took it upon themselves to commit the illegal act. It is the parent the child should turn to and say, you screwed up my life.
Yeah, why did you do this? Why did you put me in this situation? And, you know, I think it really speaks volumes to how terrible the situation is down in Mexico. And I get that, man. I've been down there. I see the poverty, okay? And, you know, the big difference is, and I guess the big joke here in the United States is that our poor population has a very large number of obese people, okay? And you don't see that in most foreign countries. You go look at the poverty-stricken people in third world countries, They don't have an obesity problem. They have a I'm dying of starvation problem. I'm dying of lack of water and proper nutrition problem.
But
we're subsidizing poverty in this country.
Yes, we are.
We've been subsidizing poverty since, literally, since the Civil War.
Well, we create obesity because we make everything so easy now where children spend more time on a computer or on a game station than outside playing. We've cut back on phys ed in schools and recesses, and you wonder why we have such a problem. It keeps increasing. Plus, you're giving them genetically modified foods, and it's already been proven that they lead to obesity.
But let's look on the bright side, Bill. At least we're teaching our 10 and 11-year-olds how to perform oral and anal sex. I mean, this is very important.
The immorality of this country has... They are turning our country into Sodom and Gomorrah. And also immigration. If it was fair immigration, Ron, we would have an equal amount coming from all countries. Instead of one country dominating by more than 50%, dominating, well, I say cut Mexico off and continue your legal immigration until other countries catch up to those numbers.
Well, you know, we've done that in the past, not just with Mexico, but other countries. We've just said, okay, that's enough. We can't do any more. And I know we hear a lot of... Go ahead, Linda.
I was just going to say, so they did the immigration problem back in the day. I do believe it was Eisenhower who took 2 years to do it, but he deported about 11 million illegals, and I would imagine they were mostly from the South. But I don't know if I need to fact check that, but that was standard about a few months ago.
He did that twice.
See, here's the thing. It can be done. They don't have the will to do it. They're opening up the bank accounts to these people. Of course they're going to come here. They get free everything. They get food stamps, for God's sakes. They get every program imaginable. And there's three extra ones in California they get that nobody gets. It's disgusting. Of course they're here. They've been doing it for 45 years in California, which is about the time it took to take us from the Golden State down to the Golden Calf. I mean, it's horrible. We are at the bottom of the list.
As far as the Mexican immigrants go, I think the best thing we can do is get with them, turn them around, and march across that border with them and destroy their corrupt government that they have now and return it to a government that for the Mexican people.
Tanks in Missouri?
Well, them tanks are, I think those tanks are planned for us. It's a centralized location. It's a great, If I was planning something against the United States, I would do the exact same thing. I would land in the middle of your country and perform, set myself up a base for stuff to come in to supply my troops and stuff, and I would work from out of there. And I believe that's kind of what they're doing. That's my opinion.
It's horrible.
Let me ask you guys something, and I know this is not a popular opinion with a lot of folks, and that's okay. But, you know, we were talking the other night about, you know, what Ron Paul's statement was about bringing troops home from around the globe where we have our global empire set up, and it's a military global empire, make no mistake about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that would be at least a temporary shot in the arm for the economy. So... what do you think the number one problem is in Mexico right now? And of course, what we hear on the news every night is the drug cartels, right? Now, where was it that we used to hear about the drug cartels all the time when cocaine was very popular? Was Colombia. Well,
mm-hmm.
What about we take away the illegality of the drug trade? When that happens, you take away the profitability, and you take away the criminal element. The
prohibition. Yeah.
Right. You take away the black market in this crap, and they fall apart.
Yeah, it's gone. It's absolutely gone.
They'll have to find somewhere else to ply their wares. Were they all going to go south to, Panama and Colombia and Costa Rica and try and sell dope down there?
was, you know, it's kind of ironic that we're complaining about the illegal drugs coming across the southern border and our troops are in Afghanistan protecting the poppy fields.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, we're guys, I mean, our military is guarding the poppy fields.
And to be honest, if you was to legalize at least marijuana, we wouldn't be getting it against from Mexico because Americans grow better than they do.
It, you know, it's one of those things. There's always an excuse why the government has to be the nanny state and look over every aspect of your life. That was never intent. That's not what government's purpose is. That's not why they're there. That's not what they were created for.
I agree.
Now, if the state wants to do that or if the county wants to do that, that's a local issue. As it should be.
How many foreign governments, Ron, do you think we're in cahoots with doing that same kind of thing with?
Way too damn many.
Exactly. It's when the people have to stand up and realize it's a global agenda to enslave all the people of all the world, to totally take us all over. And we've got to stand up in our own countries, and we've got to lean on each other instead of the governments, instead of the global elite, because they are the problem. They are what's causing all the conflicts. They're the ones who start wars and cause us to be fighting and stuff. It's just, that's where we have to start. I mean, we're starting here in our country, and I've encouraged many immigrants, you know, go to your own countries and start a revolution. So take back your country and make it work for your people, not against your people, not to control your people like slaves, but so your people have a freedom and a liberty. As it is here, we're seeing they're trying to destroy our freedoms and our liberty every day.
Yes. So basically, since the states created this federal Leviathan and we brought them into the world, can we not take them out?
Well, according to them, we can't. But I think that we can. I think that legally, if we follow the letters of the law and the Constitution, yes, we could.
True. Yeah, it's really sad. You know, Ron brought up the number of casualties of the Civil War. Basically, those were military numbers, not civilians.
Yeah, they didn't count the civilians.
Yeah, so it was, and I was being facetious because I have books and I remember these things, but it was 618,000, and it was seven combined wars that it exceeded in the military realm of casualties, and it was the Rev War, War of 1812, Korea, Mexican War, and the two world wars of the 20th century combined.
Well, you know, Rod Luke made a perfect point in the chat room that we're allowing too many legal immigrants when we don't have enough to support ourselves in our economy. We really don't.
Right.
And that's
absolutely
one of the things that really baffles me with this ideology that what's mine is mine and what's yours is ours. And that's really the mentality of the governing class, whether they be Democrat or Republican, either one. You know, these rhinos and pseudo-conservatives, the neocons, and many of the Democrats are in the same boat. You know, we can't just allow every individual into this country out of the kindness of our hearts until we've starved ourselves to death.
It's crazy.
It's just not going to work.
We take in more legal immigrants than the entire rest of the world.
And why is it all these people want to come here?
Freedom and liberty.
Right. And then they get here and they find out that that's largely a myth.
They are being used to destroy what they came seeking.
I've spoken with many Cubans. I've got a lady that right over here, her and her husband came from Kenya, as a matter of fact, and started a business. And she's mad as hell, and she should be mad as hell.
Good. You know, the gentleman that I ran into yesterday, and I almost asked you if you were hiking, because you said I was surrounded by libtards, and I had gotten finished with the guy who claimed to be a socialist. So I sent him two emails. Of course, I have nothing back from him. I don't think he wants to talk to me anymore, but I was very polite, and I invited him to the show and gave him the call-in number and all those things, and that you are a gracious host and you'd love the debate and all that stuff. But so I went to the dictionary and I looked up the word socialism, and I pretty much typed it out and sent it to him in an email. And it's pretty telling. I mean, it's there's several points in the dictionary, and one of them is a system of society or group living in which there is no private property. Well, I just can't, sorry guys, just can't go along with that.
Right. So. Well, that's exactly, Linda, why I said, you know, people like that I want to have conversation with, because when they make those comments, okay, I want to find out. I want to talk to them. I'm not trying to belittle anyone.
I know.
I want to find out, are you really, truly a socialist? Do you really believe that? Or do you believe that for others and not for yourself? Are we practicing a double standard? And, you know, most of the people, when you actually talk to them and we start whittling away at the BS, you know, they're not really socialists. They're just upset. They're angry. They're upset with the government. They have all these, you know, different things that they're pissed about.
The only thing I was presuming that he's talking about when he said that word, you know, that maybe he does not really truly know the in-depth definition of it. I don't think, and he's been, you know, indoctrinated with revisionist dialectics. Is what I think.
Exactly. That's exactly true. And so many of these people I talk to, you know, just like when I was in D.C. and you know, I've related the story about the young man and his girlfriend and him quipping about, you know, maybe they should give people a tax break and they'd have money to fix the metro in D.C. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, on taxes, how much did you pay in income taxes last year? Well, my fair share. Well, who determined that? Is that by your determination or by someone else's determination? And I'll take your fair share to be zero, because I can tell you to the penny how much I paid.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's the problem. That's the whole ideology is, you know, what's mine is mine and what's yours is ours.
It also mentioned at the bottom there was another definition of the socialist realism, which cites Marx's dialectic, you know, Hegelian perversion of truth, etc., propaganda. It was really cool. It's amazing what you can get from a dictionary in about 2 minutes. So, you know, people just do not do their own homework. I swear to God, they just take people's word for stuff. They will not verify and fact check. It's just, of course, the media is good at that.
Yeah, and that's how the liberal media survives, because people don't fact check.
Everybody is doing it, guys. Everybody is doing it, whether it's conservatives, people in the Patriot movement, whether it's progressives, you know, liberals, Democrats, Republicans, the news media. You know, what it is that we don't have a very good grasp on the English language, and they regurgitate things that they have heard without understanding what it is they're saying out of their mouths.
Yeah, and they don't even bother to do any research. No research. It's just amazing to me. I mean, oh my gosh. And people do this all the time. When they go to the polls, they vote blindly. They don't know who those supervisors and judges are. I think it's despicable. It's just, I mean, stay home if you're not going to find out who you're voting for and what they stand for. That's insane.
Well,
I mean, the founders would be just fainting.
And we've got to understand something, you know, and Rod talking about the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court doesn't issue law. The Supreme Court issues opinions on the law.
Right, right.
They have no means of enforcing it, number one. Andrew Jackson proved that.
Wow.
When they had the March for the Trail of Tears, and they were stealing property from Indians.
Yeah.
Because they wanted it to go to white settlers, white people. And, you know, the Indians, didn't matter that they owned the land. We'll just uproot you, take you off your land, and if you don't like it, we'll kill you. That was very tyrannical. And the court ordered him to stop, and he said it's their opinion. Let them enforce it.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, do you recall, Ron, in history, how they treated the people who actually went and lived with the Indians and adopted to the Indians' way, they were outcasts. They were treated, you know, terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely they were.
And
well, my question,
we have such a big argument in this country about, well, the Native Americans. It's, do you know how many Americans have a percentage of Native American blood in them?
I don't.
It's like 60-some%.
Wow.
Well, I know one of our one of the illustrious members has what 1/16 or something, right?
Oh, what's her face? I know. Miss Pocahontas.
But, you know, we have gotten the problem, as I see it, and it's not really limited to one political ideology or the other, is that we're not following the one rule that Christ talked about in the scripture, and that is to take the beam out of our own eye before we pick at the speck of dust in our neighbors. We're a damn nation of busybodies, and everybody wants to have a say in what his neighbor is doing.
I know. And plus we have, especially in California, and I imagine it's caught on everywhere else, there's still have, you know, litigation, frivolous lawsuits. It's nuts. I mean, the courts are packed with it. It's horrible. It's gotten a little better in California, especially in small claims. It's not too bad, but I mean, the judge I went before a few months, maybe a couple years ago, when I was going after a guy who stole money from me, that's a long story, and I won the case, but collecting is another issue.
Correct.
But the judge was very fair, and he asked all the right questions. The guy didn't even show up, so I was going to win by default pretty much anyway, but he actually grilled me and asked the right questions and didn't just say, oh, just because the guy didn't show up to defend himself as the defendant in the case, you know, I was going to get an automatic pass. No, he was very thorough, and if he thought it was a frivolous lawsuit, he would have thrown it out. So this guy was good.
And, you know,
he was really good.
There's the justice system or the court system in this country is reasonably decent, but they do play this game.
Yeah.
And one of the sad things is that the majority of Americans don't know the law. And
right.
the majority of attorneys don't practice the law. They practice what's called pray and pay.
Mhm. Yeah, they're the worst snake oil salesmen of all, I believe, lawyers. Most of them.
If you ever notice, when the city needs money, they come up with new ways to bind you.
Well, certainly. I mean, from a government entity standpoint, it's all about revenue and their existence. Okay, with the exception of maybe Stockton, California, who's contemplating bankruptcy, I understand.
God. Oh.
And
yeah,
where
well,
are they going to
the
get?
Whole state.
How can they be broke? They still have residents that they can lease for more money.
Yeah, except they're probably all on food stamps. Stockton? Jesus. The question that arises today is about the SB 1070 in Arizona and the Supreme Court ruling. And now I haven't done my fact-checking, so I'm going to ask you guys if you did. I know Bill's up on this stuff. The three portions that they said, the Supreme Court said, well, you don't need these. They're already federal law anyway. Is that correct?
Actually,
yes.
Oh, I was going to say, go ahead,
they're
Bill.
They're trying to return that to the states and let the states hash that out.
Okay.
But there were 14 articles in the Arizona law to begin with. Only four of them went to the court.
Okay.
So they upheld one. That returns. So you still have 11 articles of that Arizona immigration law that are upheld.
Right. Now, 2 hours after this decision came down, good old Janet Incompetano at the DHS decided, of course, at the behest of her boss, Zero, that they weren't going to take the calls from Arizona regarding this issue. I mean, now he's thumbing his nose at
they're openly aiding and abetting a criminal activity.
Well, that's because they're criminal thugs from Chicago, every one of them. It's disgusting. I mean, he's blatantly, disregarding the other branches of government.
He is refusing. He's refusing to enforce the law, and selectively against Arizona.
It's sick.
I don't see how they can take that out of Arizona and not take it out of other states.
Well, they don't enforce it in many of the other states, but this specifically is targeting Arizona, which is just egregious.
I don't understand, because we're 3.5 years into this mess, and there's no impeachment against this clown. And I told my mom today, I said, that guy could go on TV, on national TV, and go, and nothing would happen. Nothing would change. I mean, that's how nuts these people are.
Well, Linda, now you work on Agenda 21, and both parties are a part to that. Both parties have promoted and pushed it. So that's why you're not seeing anybody stand up and say anything, because illegal immigration is a large part of that agenda. It is to destroy the American culture. These people aren't coming here. They're not assimilating. They're not learning our language. They're not assimilating.
Yeah, there's no borders, language, and culture, and they're destroying it. This multiculturalism, political correctness, biodiversity, all this crap is so marked, it's just written all over it, I'm telling you.
And you're seeing the same thing with the Muslims.
Oh, it's horrible.
They're not
assimilating. Oh, no.
But they're
destroying
our culture. And the amount of them that comes in and claim entitlements, well, that destroys our economy. And by letting them come in like they do and all this stuff, you're destroying our security. They're setting the United States up to turn us over to UN control. Have you heard anything about the Rio conference?
I did. Did you hear anything about it? Because I think I sent a few things out to you guys, but it's actually Lord Monckton was there, David Spady from Americans for Prosperity was there, and I saw the videos. Absolutely amazing stuff. It's actually, it's not working. People are shying away from it. There's a whole bunch of turnaround in the UN. These elitist bastards are, excuse my French, actually backing away from their original hockey stick nonsense. And, it's starting to implode upon itself. So that's good
news
today.
They have put together a list of things, but they're not letting it out.
Okay. Today I went and made my photocopies, and I actually placed them on the desks of the city council, because Wednesday after my show, I got to go down there with my chalkboard. I'm bringing a Glenn Beck-style chalkboard, and I got my colored map today of the Wildlands Project. They call it the death map, and I'm laying it out. I'm bringing the whole thing. It's two giant white poster boards with all my timeline on it, and I am going to speak on this issue. And it's an open meeting for items not on the agenda, so I can speak in public for 3 minutes. And I have to time my speech, but I am so tired of it. And that's what I told the socialist yesterday. I said, I'm fighting it. And if I have to tell every single person in the state of California about 821, I'm going to do it. Oh, he did not like it. You should have seen the look on his face. He was horrified. He was absolutely horrified.
But you have municipalities all over the country bought into it. Why? Because right now they're making money off of it.
Yep. It's federal grants. It's called regionalism.
It's all about money, grabbing more property and this and that. And they know what they're playing to. But money means more to them than the people that they're supposed to be representing.
And also power, Bill. Don't forget that, because I have a feeling, especially in San Carlos, I don't know if I sent you guys that video. I tried to get that one to you. It's 52 minutes long, and it was called The Crucifixion of San Carlos. Well, Rosa Chiori lives up there, and she's been championing. Her website is Democrats Against Agenda 21, and she's been speaking all over the country to try to wake people up. She was actually speaking for her 4 minutes or whatever they gave her at that meeting. And she did an eloquent job. There were like 20 or 30 people from different groups, they weren't all connected to each other, who were explaining about the end game of Agenda 21. And those rat SOBs, I mean, their arrogance, their demeanor, the looks on their faces, they were just like Nazis, Ron. I'm telling you, I was just livid. And I actually sent that whole link to them, to the city council. Whether they're going to check it out or not is beyond my – scope, but, you know, I'm sick of this stuff. They are in on it. I'm telling you, these guys are in on it.
Well, you know, getting back to the immigration thing for just a second.
Go ahead.
Two of the things that they overruled, one was a portion of the law that makes it a crime in Arizona to apply for or hold a job in Arizona without having legal work authority. I find
that's
that
federal.
Interesting.
That's federal.
Well, it shouldn't be in Arizona to hold a job or apply for a job. You need to be sure that you can legally work in the state of Arizona. And that's not federal. That's Arizona state law.
Okay.
And Justice Kennedy, there is a federal law that states the very same thing. So Arizona is simply mirroring the federal law.
Exactly.
Okay. And Kennedy actually said something that was really interesting to me. And he said that the federal government, in this case, brings suit against a sovereign state. Well, if they're sovereign, how in the hell are they being sued?
Exactly.
Okay, the two don't jive.
No.
You can't sue a sovereign, okay? The serfs can't sue the flipping king. The other one is that they struck down the authority of a police officer to arrest someone if the officer believes that he has committed a crime that could cause him to be deported. Now, what if he just committed a crime? How about that? Where do we draw the line? How do you know the officer thought that the crime this gentleman committed could cause him to be deported? No matter where the crime takes place.
Ridiculous.
It's completely ignorant, and Justice Scalia, in his usual fashion, and I usually applaud Scalia. There's been a couple of times I didn't. The Fourth Amendment case was one where I wanted to go up and jack slap him. but he wrote correctly in dissent. Arizona has moved to protect its sovereignty. Not in contradiction of federal law, but in complete compliance with it.
Yes.
The laws under challenge here do not extend or revise federal immigration restrictions, but merely enforce these restrictions more effectively. If securing its territory in this fashion is not within the power of Arizona, we should cease referring to it as a sovereign state. Hear, hear.
Wow.
I agree.
Absolutely. Wow. That should be applauded. Wow, that's awesome. Standing ovation.
Yeah.
Well, he's absolutely correct. I mean, you can't say that Arizona is a sovereign state and then say that the federal government is a sovereign over the sovereign and bringing suit. The idea that the central government could sue one of the members that comprise the union was not even considered possible. And we're going to pick Robert back up. He dropped off on us. I think the dog may have got a hold of his cell phone.
Hi, Robert.
Welcome back, young man.
Hello. Hey, how you doing? You know what this sounds like, Mr. Ron?
Socialism?
No. I was kidding at that, but I think it's about the states is ready to do a military on our government. I think that's what we should do.
And but now at the same time, and we say that, but at the same time, you've got federal troops training National Guard, which is supposedly our militia now, which the National Guard has been federalized for decades. So there, you know what? I gotta ask. This whole thing with the tanks up there in St. Louis is really ticking me off. Okay,
that's why I said that, because that's what really upset me. So go ahead.
I was in the military. I served in the U.S. Army, and I drove an 8-inch howitzer, which is a 36-ton piece of armor, and I drove a 155 self-propelled howitzer, which is about a 30-ton piece of armor. We had training areas on the base. But aside from the training areas, what we also had on the base was residential areas.
Hold on, Ron. I got to get this.
We had residential areas on post. So if they wanted to, if they really wanted to train these guys how to operate these vehicles in a residential area, why not take them out to the military base, the closest military base, and operate them on post where the people wouldn't be freaked out about seeing the damn tanks and armored personnel carrier rolling down the streets, but yet you still get the feel for a residential neighborhood.
Unbelievable.
Exactly. Homeland Security at Butlerville, Indiana. They have little houses and little residential areas set up. Some of them look like from the Middle East. Some of them look like from Mexico, even. And they do their training in there. Why in the hell couldn't they have done that in a place like that?
Exactly.
Instead of coming out into the streets.
And you got to look at who it was that was doing the training. This wasn't just any group of military. This was MPs. From Maryland.
Wow.
So what are they teaching? And they are talking about law enforcement.
Oh,
dudes.
Yeah.
Okay, and then they get these two colored guys on there. So I think it's a good idea, you know. Maybe cut down on the crime. And the one guy says, well, you know, it's like when you go to another country, you know, you don't see the police, you see troops. And I'm like, yeah, you're exactly right. And I don't want to be like the rest of those countries. And there are laws against that in this country.
I know. So
primarily
far,
what's called the posse comitatus.
Yep. But they're trying to get rid of that. Easily they're trying. And my question is, where is the local sheriff? Where is the local law enforcement police departments and the oath keepers and people who understand the Constitution who will side with the American people in this deal? That's my question.
They're standing silent, and I'm telling you that these police departments absolutely love our Department of Defense because they're getting all the old hand-me-downs, and these guys go out there. I mean, you know, we've got local guys here in Cherokee County, Georgia, that run around in military uniform, okay, with the flak vest and the whole nine. They're dressed in all, you know, OD green, and they've got a Woody, you know. They think they're, by God, they're dumb. I'm Johnny Law. I'm right there. You know, they think they're damn airborne paratroopers or something.
And when you say Woody, you're not talking about a 1946 Ford surfer wagon,
no,
are you?
No, I'm not. And Kyra and Rod are talking a little bit about the National Guard, and when I said they were federalized, they absolutely are federalized. They are supposed to be, you know, a state military force, and that was one of the big things about the military going into New Orleans or Louisiana during Katrina. But I'm telling you right now that all of the commanders over the National Guard units are not local state guys. They are federal active military.
Jeez.
And that's who they take their marching orders from.
So is this the time for us to, like, contact all of our local sheriffs and police departments and find out where they stand on this nonsense?
We've got to be rattling their cages. You know, that's what I've been talking about. We have got to rattle the cages of these guys and say, look, you know, we've got to get citizens groups together and say, this isn't right, and we don't want this crap going on in our county.
Exactly. Yeah,
I'm sorry, but it's tantamount to a damned invasion.
It is.
You look at the 14 states that were trying to put in militias, and Obama and them started fighting him because Obama wouldn't have had the power over those militias. The state would have. And he wants the power over all the military.
You're right, and I'll tell you why, Bill, and I'll tell you exactly where that goes, and I was reading some of that last night, and that is the belief that that Holder and his ilk have, and he was discussing the D.C. versus Heller case, which was the gun ban case in Washington, D.C., and it says that, where is it? Holder joined the Reno-led amicus brief, which urged the Supreme Court to uphold Washington, D.C.'s handgun ban and said the position of the Department of Justice from Franklin Roosevelt through Clinton was that the Second Amendment does not protect an individual right to keep and bear arms for the purposes unrelated to a state's operation of a well-regulated militia. So they're trying to take the individual right to keep and bear arms and tie that into a state running a well-regulated militia.
Yeah, they want to disarm us.
Really the only right that you have to keep and bear arms is if you're in the state militia. That's not at all what the amendment says.
No, doesn't.
No.
I know. You and I know. But
the well-regulated militia that they speak of in the Second Amendment is the armed citizens, not a state-run government organization.
Right.
And when they say a well-regulated militia, I would suggest that Mr. Holder and some of these other folks look up the definition of the word regulated. You know, if you own an automobile, you should regulate your air pressure in your tires. And by regulate, I mean that you should keep them fully inflated. And that is the context in which regulated is used in this amendment. A well-regulated, a fully armed militia.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I say that's the context in which it's being used? Because it's talking about the right to keep and bear arms. For what purpose? To fully arm the damned militia. That is a well-regulated militia. That does not mean a well-controlled group of people that is controlled by the government.
Right.
You know, and can go out and do nice drills and stuff. No. It means fully armed to the teeth.
Yeah. How many times have they perverted the word regulate when they go through the Commerce Clause? It's the same dialectic Hegelian nonsense, and it's got to stop. People are so ignorant. It drives me. My patience gets very thin, Ron. It gets very thin.
Well, it should be thin because, you know, it's one of those old sayings my pops used to tell me, don't blow smoke up my skirt and tell me my shorts are on fire. That's a real polite way of saying what he used to say.
Yeah.
Okay, and don't pee on my head and tell me it's raining. But that's exactly what's going on.
The only reason we're not already under agenda control of the UN and Agenda 21 is because we still have our arms.
Yeah, well,
that's the thing that's holding them up, is how do they disarm us? We're the largest armed army on the planet. The American people are the citizens. And how do you take away our arms with the least amount of casualties?
Well, they'll take them by force if they have to. I mean, if they do that martial law trigger, you know, they'll do it, just like they did with Katrina.
Therein is their problem. Because even with all the stuff they have, when you're outnumbered, as bad as they are outnumbered, it will not be easy.
Well,
it's going to be a long, drawn-out, bloody thing.
Yeah, it will be.
And if it comes to that, I would say, you go after these people who are supposed to represent you.
Well, I just don't know. See, I don't know their strategy. I don't know how they're going to implement it. You know, as far as the FEMA camps and the, you know, the dots on the mailboxes and the 3 and 4 in the morning, you know, that's what I don't understand. I don't know how that's going to happen. I don't know. I'm surrounded by senior citizens here. I don't know who's got guns and who doesn't. I don't have, you know, my neighborhood watch and a well-regulated militia at my fingertips.
They'll have to go after the cities first. That's where the majority of the people are. You'll go there first. Now, you looked at Chicago last weekend. They were offering $100, the cops were, for you to turn in a gun.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And people
and like someone said, some private citizens should have offered $200.
Yeah. Oh,
well,
they've done that.
They've done that kind of crap up in Illinois. You know, they pay people to bring in their guns, and they bring them in by the droves. And I don't understand it. I mean, you got to be an idiot. And
yeah, the next thing you know, they got a crime wave because the criminals didn't turn theirs in.
Oh yeah, it's stupid. I don't know the strategy, whether they're just going to completely just clamp down with a complete iron fist or not. I mean, Ron, do you know what they're planning on doing? Apparently, with the tanks, that's what they're going to do.
Well, it seems to me at the very least they're just trying to get people acclimated to seeing the military in the streets.
Well, we got to stop that nonsense too.
And I want to give you a little tidbit. This is going back to 2009, and this is just kind of a follow up on the thing I sent you the other day, where evidently Mr. Henry Kissinger was playing cheerleader for Mitt Romney.
Oh my God.
You have a report from March 22nd, 2009, 3:22. Imagine that. Kremlin reports on the extraordinary meeting held today between President Medvedev and former United States Secretaries of State Henry Kissinger and William Perry and former U.S. Senator and top defense expert Sam Nunn are stating that Americans are acknowledging for the first time their acceptance of a new global order in which they seek to partner with natural resource-rich Russia and oil-rich nations of the Middle East in order to ensure their survival into the 21st century. It goes on, blah, 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 but basically in it, Kissinger made the statement that they would disarm the American people by September.
Of this year?
No, this was back in 2009.
Oh, okay. Linda,
it'll take them years to do it. It ain't just going to happen overnight. They'll probably put out a decree first, asking people to turn their guns in. Then they'll put the military running through the streets to intimidate and get more people to turn their guns in. And then they'll have to go to fighting the ones that refuse to do it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. If that's the timeline, then we must sound the alarm bells and start, you know, screaming at the top of our lungs on all these issues. Because whether it's Agenda 21, illegal immigration, you know, the total revisionist history of everything, the bastardization of the Constitution and the Declaration, we have got to continue to scream. And like I told that guy the other day, I said, that's it. I said, if I have to inform 30 million Californians of Agenda 21, then that's my job, and I will accomplish it until they put a bullet in my brain. That's exactly where I'm going. And Michael Savage said this before. That's the reason, the main reason that Hitler knew he had to disarm those people. Because it would have been over in a month, Bill. It would have been done. Yeah, there would have been a few dead Jews, but not 11 million people. Those Gestapos would have been annihilated if they had not confiscated those guns from those people. You know what I'm saying?
But we live in a whole different world, Linda. They can use a bioweapon on us.
Right.
They can use electric magnetic pulse on us.
Right.
It's a whole different kind of world. But they lack the reasoning to think that a lot of those people you trained to do those very things and created these very things don't work for you anymore and have that same capability to do it back to you.
Exactly. Here's the thing. I am very, optimistic at this point because people are waking up left and right. People are standing up. There's thousands of people here in California who are going to every city council meeting on the planet over and over and over again talking about 821, screaming to the top of their lungs. People are pushing back. And you get enough people pushing back and the public will win out because they have to cave to that kind of public pressure. And that's my goal. I have to wake the people up no matter what and just keep saying it. You know, I'm going to do the reverse propaganda on them. I'm going to do the same damn thing that Goebbels and Bernays did, and I'm going to start screaming and saying it over and over again till people believe it. You know what I'm saying? Only this time it's the truth.
Well, our problem lies within the fact that it is both parties doing it. And if you try telling people that, they really get weirded out. I posted a while ago. Do we vote for Obama, who will turn us over to the UN, or do we vote for Romney, who will turn us over to the UN?
You know what? It's going to come down to either people waking up en masse, Bill, or it's going to come down to like a civil war a bloody coup, revolution, whatever, you know what I mean? Because you and me and 600 million guns out there ain't going to give up their guns, especially the hunters in Alabama and places like where you live. They ain't going to do it. Michigan, they're not going to turn them in. No. I mean, I'm not, for sure. Anybody who's – and there's, believe it or not, there's a lot more conservatives in California than you realize. They don't get the publicity, of course, because the mainstream media is all Marxist, as far as I can see. So they're not going to tell about all the conservative movements down here. And this is what I'm telling you about the Tea Party and the 912ers and the grassroots guys and the freedom fighters like me and all these guys, people for property rights. We have been working our tail ends off, as you know, and I know you have too, behind the scenes. This is why the lame brain media doesn't get it. Even the Fox News and, you know, the semi-conservative media, they don't get it because they're not in it. They're only seeing what they want to see. You know what I'm saying? And we have not brought to fruition yet what we're going to do. Hopefully we're going to get Ted Cruz and Murdoch and, you know, the good people throughout the Senate. And we're just going to start kicking butt. And I know that Romney is not the one we want. We want Ron Paul. But if he gets elected, I swear to you, I will send him a letter he will not soon forget. And I will threaten him and say, look, since the economic collapse is coming down and I may die on my threshold, you're going to outlive me. And you don't want to go down that path because I will haunt you if you do. I will tell him that. I absolutely will.
You see, Romney, a lot of people push him for Rubio. And Rubio has the same problem as Obama. He's truthfully not eligible to be vice president. And I'm kind of wondering if even Romney is.
Well, I'm not worried about Romney's eligibility so much as that Rubio, I don't believe, is a true conservative like we would like. I think he's been co-opted and bought. You know, he's lost his soul a little bit, you know.
Hell, neither is Romney. So, I mean, you know.
Well, no, Romney's not a conservative at all. No.
It kills me. Because the one person who was running and is still running, the one person who actually stands for the Constitution and the rule of law, because the one person both sides attack and denigrate.
It's disgusting.
And you can expect that in the future, too. I don't think,
well,
I don't
know,
think,
that
I don't think we've... I don't think we got another election after this one. If this one goes down,
I don't either.
We won't have another.
I don't either.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And I beat my head against a frickin' wall every day with that. I mean, honest to God, I don't get it where these people come from. Okay, so you don't like this or you don't like that about the guy. Fine. He is still volumes, monumental volumes better than... the choice of no choices.
Yeah.
Well, around here, Romney would be a sissy.
He is.
he's girlish. He is
he's a girly man.
He's effeminate.
So was Obama. God, can't we get someone who... It just... I'm like, Ron, I beat my head against the wall. I'm like, where in the hell are we going? And Ron, you know... when we first started all this, I was as skeptical about Paul as anybody. But I did my homework. I did my research.
Yes.
I listened to what you said, and I went and checked things out. And I got to tell you, I'd rather have Ron Paul than 10 Romneys and 10 Obamas.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you know, I do applaud all of us for doing our own homework because I did the same thing, and I know Ron had sent all of us different videos on Ron Paul, whether short clips, et cetera. And I was so privileged to be in the same area of him here in San Diego to see him speak in person. And he won me over. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The guy he's brilliant. I mean,
and the thing is, he doesn't just give lip service to it. He's voted that way. And
yes.
I hear, and you know, I hear these guys, we got this guy here, Eric, I can't think of his last name right now. He's taken over for Neil Bortz. But he does this redstate.com thing, and he's an attorney, and he was constantly bashing on Paul, and he tried to take Ron Paul to task for his voting record, because he voted against this or he voted against that. He's not a true conservative. He's not a true conservative. And I'm like, I just want to call up and say, okay, Eric Erickson, Okay, well, let's read through the text of that legislation, shall we? And let's see what it says. Most of the time when he was voting against something, he was voting against it not necessarily on the principle of what the bill was trying to do, but on the principle that the Congress doesn't have the authority to implement this bill, no matter how much I would like to see it done.
Exactly.
Got it.
He has not only talked the talk, he has walked the walk. And I find very few, there are very few out there that have done that.
Yeah, they always bend. It is that damnable word, compromise. It just makes me ill. And I understand you have to bend a little, but not on principle. Okay?
Yep.
Not on the foundational principles. Those are not negotiable.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I've thought about that. I've said it. I've stated it in public, in more venues than just Blog Talk Radio, you know. And it when you talk about Ron Paul's character, what he mirrors, and nobody's perfect, let's face it, he mirrors the character of God, which is unchanging, as we know, is totally unchanging. And what Ron Paul does is he's doing it because he knows it's not the right thing to do, not because he's going to get caught or this, that, and the other. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. That's one of the arguments, you know, that people talk about, oh, he's a racist or he's this or he's that.
Oh, Christ.
And he said, look, you know, the problem is this, people, my personal beliefs as far as don't mean squat. The law is very clear. Congress has the authority to do X, Y, and Z. You're asking Congress to do A, B, and C. They don't have the authority to do that. And even if it's a great law, even if he personally thinks, man, this would be awesome if we could do this, but we don't have the authority. It was never given to us. He'll vote against it.
Yep.
That's standing on principle. You know, the rest of them would be like, when I look at the majority of the 535, it's akin to a church full of Christians going in to pray to Allah at a mosque.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
there is nothing sacred to them.
Yeah, no. Or they go on Sunday and repent and then go out and do horrible things during the week. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah,
they're
go
not
to church
it.
On Sunday, beat your wife on Monday.
Absolutely,
well,
horrible.
Now, you got on the churches, so I will say this. This is my part about that. If you go to church on a Sunday, when you leave the church, you're supposed to go out and take the word to the sinners then. And if you don't do anything but wait till the next day to go to church, and then you go in there and you're wasted.
Well, you see, we have this false doctrine ideology that has been taught for eons, and that is that, you know, Sunday is God's day, the Sabbath. The Sabbath was actually Saturday. And we're, you know, Christ came and we're not living under the Jewish law anymore. The end of the Jewish age happened a long time ago. But nonetheless, every day is supposed to be dedicated to God and serving God, not just Sunday.
Every
You're supposed
day
to have
is
a
God's
day of
day.
Rest.
Sunday is the day of rest.
Correct.
But
church is supposed
it.
To happen
every day.
Every day
is God's day. Yes. And if you're saved and going to church, well, then, you know, the healthy don't need a doctor. You've got to get that word out to the ones who aren't in church. And by going home and sitting on your rear and not doing a crap until you go back to church, you're not doing God's will.
Well,
that's correct. And
where did Christ do his
and
preaching?
To him. Yeah,
did he visit all the synagogues in every town?
No, he's on the streets. And that's one thing I give my mother-in-law credit. When she was doing preaching before she got so old, but she was doing it, she was going to the street corners. She was going to the jails. She was going to where the people were who needed to hear about God.
Yep.
That's
well, you know
Jesus
the old saying, preaching to the choir, right? You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's what Jesus did. What did he say? He didn't come to condemn the world, but to save it. He says, why should I have to preach to the righteous? I need to preach to the sinners.
Correct. Now,
exactly.
now, since we're on the topic and I've only got about 5 minutes left, but I wanted to ask you all a couple of questions.
Okay.
First of all, what is an antichrist?
Well,
not me.
Not me.
And how many times is the antichrist mentioned in the Bible?
God, I don't know. Tell me.
Okay, the Antichrist is mentioned 5 times, actually 4 times singular and 1 time plural. They're all in John, either 1 John 2:18, 1 John 2:22, 1 John 4:3, 2 John 7, and mentioned twice in 1 John 2:18, once singular and once plural. Antichrist, the Greek is Antichristos, which in the Strong's Concordance, the definition is found in the Greek at 500, an opponent of the Messiah. You notice he didn't mention Revelation in there anywhere.
No.
Wow.
Because the Antichrist is not mentioned in Revelation.
Wow.
Mentioned in Revelation is a beast, and in fact, there's 2 different beasts in Revelation. Mm-hmm. One beast is Satan himself, who's seen in the sky. Remember, he was the prince of the air, correct? The other beast comes from the abyss, okay? And the abyss, in Jewish tradition, was the depths of the sea, the waters. And the many waters in Scripture is defining or describing the nations. And the nations were places like Judea.
Wow.
And Jerusalem.
Oh, my gosh.
And Antioch. Okay, so the beast comes from within the nations. Well,
wow.
I believe the beast actually did come from within the nations and did speak many blasphemes. And the whole Babylon that rode on the beast, okay, that's your Pharisees. And all the kings committed adultery with the whore. They were all in intercourse with Jerusalem. I mean, guys, July 9th, I have a gentleman on, and Bill, you've got to tune in on the Constitution Hour, July 9th. I have a gentleman on, and we're going to have a question and answer session on the preterist viewpoint. And I know there's going to be a lot of questions there, and I know there will be people that just want to come at him with, you know, and challenge and shoot him down, and don't believe that, and that's fine. But he's certainly more adept at explaining things than I am when it comes to Scripture.
The book of Daniel, the book of Daniel talks about an evil. It never refers to him as an antichrist.
Correct.
But it says that evil will come promising change, change in the laws and change in the views, and what they will bring is destruction. Now, to me, that fits somebody's thing.
Oh, well, sure.
When Nostradamus said Hassan, he never said Hussein, he said Hassan, as being an antichrist type person, if you read the description, Saddam Hussein does not fit that description.
No,
Barack Hassan Hussein Obama does.
I can go along with that. I believe that, you know, there are many antichrists, but the antichrist is not the one that, you know, brings about the changes. And if you look at what happened, if you look at what occurred in Jerusalem, in the temple, the priest. Who was it Christ was confronting on a daily basis? He thumbed his nose at them. He tweaked their nose every opportunity he got. Why? Because they were not following God's law. They'd created their own law. They were a law unto themselves, and they were using the word of God to rule over the people as a terror to them and for their own enrichment. And not for the glory of God. Okay, they weren't keeping his word. And if you go back and you read through Jeremiah, read through Jeremiah, my goodness, if that isn't a warning to the nation of Israel, that I mean,
yeah,
God flat out says, I am going to wipe you from the face of the earth. God might as well at that point in time have been Ahmadinejad, because he said, I'm going to wipe you from the face of the earth.
Wow. So, Mr. Golden, are you out of time?
I am out of time. I got like 10 seconds and we'll be in the archives. But
okay,
guys,
but
God bless everybody.
God bless all you guys, and Robert and Ron and Bill and everyone in the chat room, and love you guys. And we'll just keep fighting.
Absolutely, guys. And thanks for calling in. I enjoy the support and good conversation going tonight. Really makes the show fly by. And really appreciate all your efforts, everything you guys are doing. And just, you know, all I can say is keep the faith. And, you know, somebody, somewhere, when this stuff falls apart, there's going to have to be people to pick up the pieces.
Can't
see us. We need good, honest, decent people that have principles founded in God's law to
yep.
rebuild this thing so that we don't have such a debacle again.
Absolutely.
I'm
on.
So, guys, thanks for calling in.
God bless. Thanks.
Good night, everybody, and we'll see y'all on the chat room and on the other shows during the week.
Love you guys. Thanks,
guys. Good night.
Good night.